Max Haven, professor at NASCAD University, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to the Halifax Media Co-op today. You were just down in New York City, but you weren't necessarily there, you know, seeing the Big Apple or taking in some Broadway shows, although you might have done that too. What were you doing down there in particular?
Well, my research takes me down to New York about once a year. I study by trade a cultural theorist, and I study the financial markets and the financialization of society. So I got onto New York to both look at what's going on in terms of finance and financial regulation, what various people are thinking about finance, and what activists are doing about the financial sector. But while I was there, I was able to take a look into some of the very interesting things that have come out of the Occupy Wall Street movement. I was actually down in New York a year ago in fall of 2011 to see that movement at its heyday during the encampment in Zuccotti Park or Freedom Plaza. And so this year when I was back, I was able to see some of the initiatives that they're involved in now, which was very interesting. And at the very end of my trip, I was there for Hurricane Sandy, which was a sort of unique meteorological event, but also a very unique response that came out of Occupy Wall Street.
And so while the movement doesn't have an encampment, how is the proverbial heartbeat of the Occupy movement down on Wall Street? What are they up to these days, and how did they react? What did you see them doing with relief efforts for Sandy?
They're doing a whole bunch of things, a lot like the Occupy movement here and elsewhere. Even after the evictions in the fall or early winter of 2011, Occupy movements, both in New York and elsewhere, sort of broke off into a lot of different working groups working on a variety of issues. So, of course, New York is a huge city, and it had a huge movement, and it had a lot of different working groups that split off from it. So I'm not even sure of all of the different things that they're doing. Some of the initiatives are sort of underground. Some of the initiatives have folded into larger, already established initiatives. But a few things that are going on is, for instance, there's a very strong anti-fracking contingent that's come out of Occupy Wall Street that are staging protests at the major financial backers of fracking technology and fracking activity. There's a group that was organizing a rent strike in one of the poorer neighborhoods of Brooklyn. There are other groups that have gone into actually a national initiative in the States called Occupy Our Homes, which is helping people who are facing evictions based on the 2008 sort of subprime meltdown, helping them stay in their homes and resist having those homes evicted. And there's a whole variety of other initiatives that, for instance, many of the artists and cultural workers who are associated with Occupy have formed their own collective and are now protesting a lot of the injustices that are going on in the art world and the culture world. The graphic designers have formed a cooperative. So there's all sorts of initiatives that have come out of Occupy Wall Street in very exciting ways based on the principles that they developed there of sort of grassroots democracy, mutual aid, horizontal organizing. But the other one, which you just mentioned at the end of your question, is Occupy Sandy. And when the hurricane hit, literally less than 24 hours after the storm had broken, there were organizers from Occupy Wall Street on the ground at community centers, mostly around Brooklyn, but also in some of the poorer areas of Manhattan, starting to organize with the local community to call out to the broader New York community to get resources like food and clothing in and distribute them out to people who needed them in a sort of amazing, very, very responsive grassroots hurricane relief effort, which in many ways has outperformed not only FEMA, which is the American Disaster Relief Organization, which, as many people saw in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, is practically useless in many ways. Not only did it outperform FEMA, which isn't particularly hard in some ways, it also outperformed the Red Cross, because the Red Cross is very good at setting up large distribution centers, large shelters, but in terms of actually getting support from individuals to individuals, I think the Occupy Sandy initiative was an amazing, amazing example of that.
Now, why do you think that is? I mean, we've got these institutions like the Red Cross, mm-hmm. like FEMA, that potentially are very much top-down, potentially very much imbued with that bureaucratic kind of style of red tape, etc. Why do you think that the Occupy movement, as it pertains to hurricane relief, mm-hmm. for example, why do you think it outpaces traditional bureaucratic sources of aid or relief?
I think probably for a couple of reasons. The first is that the people who were really at the core of organizing Occupy Sandy were seasoned organizers who had really cut their teeth in Zuccotti Park or Liberty Plaza, where they were, you know, the cooks were providing meals for thousands of people every night based on, you know, donations. And the organizers were very, very skilled at coordinating these huge general assemblies of up to like 3,000 people, making collective decisions that needed to be made very quickly. So I think Occupy had an infrastructure of skills that allowed them to mobilize the grassroots far more effectively than, you know, the Red Cross or FEMA, which are effectively relief corporations. They may be owned by non-governmental boards, they may be owned by the state, but effectively they run like corporations. They money gets injected at the top, and what comes out at the end is services. And those organizations are not looking to mobilize people power. They're looking for volunteers to sort of staff them to reduce their overhead costs. But in many ways, they're like the equivalent of like of a corporation. In many ways, they have revenue streams and they have expenditures and they provide certain services and they can be measured by those metrics. And I think what underscores the difference really is the sort of second thing, which is that those organizations at best understand their work to be charity. They understand it to be helping people in need and getting those people out of need so that they can participate once again in what is effectively a horrifically unjust economic system. And I think where Occupy Sandy came in was saying, you know, what is happening to the people who've been affected by Hurricane Sandy isn't just a natural disaster. The natural disaster is part of it. It's also part of an ongoing economic disaster in the United States. So when the hurricane hit, the communities that hit the hardest were housing projects in poor communities out on the coast, who, you know, for whom losing their property, for whom losing their cars or losing their jobs because they couldn't get to work because the subways were down, those were huge economic and social costs. And so Occupy Sandy was able to go out and work with people in those communities saying, we don't just understand you as a charity case who needs to be helped. We understand you and us as suffering under the same system, not suffering the same ways. You know, some of us suffer because we don't have great jobs, because we're precariously employed. Some of us suffer because we don't have enough to eat. Some of us suffer for all sorts of different reasons under the system. But we're basing our activities on the principle of solidarity rather than charity. And I think it was with that that they were able to mobilize such a huge cross-section of the New York population, both the wealthy and the poor, both the marginalized and the people really at the center of things, to do a really amazing job of feeding tens of thousands of people, of getting volunteers out to neighborhoods to clean up fallen down houses and clean up people's basements and stuff, of getting clothes to people who needed it, and of just providing a friendly face and the knowledge that you're not alone, which I think a lot of people were facing after the storm, living, you know, even for up to a month without heat or hot water.
Kind of brings us into the next thing of a debt storm.
Mm-hmm.
And how is Occupy reacting to that with this project called Rolling Jubilee? Maybe you can explain that.
Yeah, the Rolling Jubilee is a really innovative idea. And the basic principle behind it is, as we learned in 2008 when the financial crisis hit, when you go into debt in the United States, you're not just going into debt to a bank. The bank turns around and sells that debt on to another company. And that company might break up that debt into thousands of pieces, bundle up with other people's debt, and sell it on to someone else. So there's a huge market in the States for secondary debt, tertiary debt, and on and on. And a lot of that debt eventually gets lost in the system, especially the debt of the poorest people. So to take medical debt, which is the example that Rolling Jubilee uses, of course, there's no socialized healthcare in the United States, despite recent victories by the Obama regime. And so people tend to go into a huge amount of debt to get medical treatment, especially if you have a chronic ailment. And that debt is then sold on by the people who originally lend that money onto other investors who want to buy it for various reasons. And years later, after people can't pay it, that debt gets sold on to further and further investors for pennies on the dollar. So a $10,000 medical debt might sell for $500. And the question is, well, if somebody's buying it for $500, why should the original debtor be beholden to pay $10,000? Of course, this is wreaking havoc on most people's lives. Medical debt in the United States is the number one cause of personal bankruptcy. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are being driven into utter destitution. And their health is worsening because of that economic destitution, and the suicide rates are skyrocketing because of that that constant debt. So what Rolling Jubilee decided to do is raise money through a variety of means, mostly by just asking people for donations, in order to go to the brokers who sell the quote-unquote distressed medical debt of individuals, buy it up, and forgive it. So effectively, for $500, they would buy someone's $10,000 medical debt, write them a letter, and say, congratulations, thanks to this solidarity effort, you no longer have to pay that $10,000. You're free.
You're going to be talking about all this and more tomorrow night. Tell us about that event.
Yeah, I am one of the co-directors of what we call the Radical Imagination Project, which is a project me and my research collaborator run out of Mount St. Vincent University, and it's dedicated to fostering radical ideas in the Halifax community and among Halifax social movements. So as part of our speaker series, which has been running for the last year and a half, I'm going to be speaking tomorrow night at the Dalhousie Architecture School, which is on Spring Garden Road right across from the Spring Garden Library. The event's at 6:30, and it's free and open to everyone. And I'll be talking about these two initiatives. I think the subtitle of the event is The Past, Present, and Future of Occupy Wall Street. And I'll be looking forward to discussing what ramifications these things might have for our activities here in Halifax, too.
Great. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.